This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown and Ken Coleman.
Alongside Chris Brown, I'm Ken Coleman. Welcome to another edition of the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Our feature conversation is with none other than Pat Lencioni. You are going to enjoy Chris's conversation with Pat. That's coming up in just a little bit. Chris, we are having so much fun. It's summertime, and we're fresh off of the launch of True Stewardship with Chris Brown, a national radio show. We've been talking about it. We've been dreaming. We've been doing it. And now you're off and running, and I can't think of anything else to start with. And how's it going? Give us an update.
Yeah, it's been 1 month in. And
is that right?
Yeah. Well, can you believe it?
I really can't.
Yeah, and having a lot of fun every day from everywhere from Seattle down to Tampa. And then, of course, the podcast is jamming. So having a lot of fun talking to people from all over the country. And folks have been calling in from Canada, you know, and from Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. So I just love the fact that the podcast can reach the entire world.
What do you love most about this show? It's different than this podcast. I mean, these are people calling in and asking you such deeply personal financial questions. You studied this stuff, everything that they've ever said or wrote, and now here you are, and you're answering their questions.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is the fact that it's dialogue and not monologue.
Yeah.
It's a big difference that, you know, you go speak on a stage, you talk for 30 minutes, you talk for 60 minutes, you walk off, and you feel like, I just didn't really have a conversation. I got to relay some information. I got to relay some inspiration. But this is a dialogue where I'm getting to just engage with somebody. And just really, I feel like I'm touching real pain that's out there. And to be able to be a minister to them is just a huge honor.
I want you to talk briefly about why we decided to do this in the Christian marketplace. You know, obviously Dave's on secular radio, but this is, we're not playing around here. This is serious stuff. 20 markets, nationally syndicated show, and there's a reason why you're doing this. And I ask you that to kind of talk to our church leaders here that are listening, because we want their support.
Yep.
This is a whole other channel where people are listening and need this guidance.
Yeah. Well, it's no secret that we're reclaiming stewardship in America. We're just taking that word back. That word has been, confused. Folks think that it's, recycling or taking care of the environment or maybe it's even fundraising, and it's just not what it is. It's managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory. That's what it is, and it's not just some old, stale church word. This is living this life intentionally for God. It's a big deal, and so we're doing that here right now on this podcast through the pulpit.
That's right.
And we're also doing it through the pew.
That's huge.
We're doing that through the seats. Those of you, the pew is like this old, it's this old bench. Some of you don't know what a pew is.
I laugh, but there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are not quite sure what a pew actually looks like.
Yes, it's a long, very solid, comfortable bench.
Got to ask you this, though. You said solid, comfortable. I come from the world. Huh? Bob, the producer, is behind the glass laughing because he knows. Either you had the cushion on the pew or the no cushion. I come from the no cushion world.
Mm.
Cushion or no cushion.
Wow, that's commitment. That's commitment.
Oh, or just cheap. The church was cheap. Let's just be honest. My dad's church, small church.
Yeah.
Couldn't afford the cushion. Did you come from cushion or no cushion?
You know what? A cushion.
Yeah. Oh, Bob just said in our ear, velvet or no velvet. That's right. Velvet cushion. Good call. And it was always crimson.
Am I right? Yes. Yep. Or like a hunter green.
Amen.
Anyway, back on the script.
Script.
We're going through the pulpit and we're going through the pew.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that we reclaim this word stewardship with everybody.
That's
and there's a big vacuum in Christian radio. Larry Burkett was that voice for a long, long time, and Howard Dayton is still on there, but there's so much work to do, you know? And then folks like Ron Blue and, of course, Dave, you know? But in the on Christian radio, there's a huge vacuum, and we wanted to fill that. We wanted to fulfill that need.
And I'll tell you something else we want. We're not ashamed of this. We want you church leaders to help us spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Chris, let's just tell them real quick how they can connect with your radio show. What's the best way for our leaders to kind of say, all right, hey, we can send you here?
Mm-hmm. Again, it's Chris Brown's True Stewardship is the name of it. It is on the dial in 20 different markets, anything from Seattle all the way to Tampa. You find out which radio stations those are on stewardship.com. And if we're not in your city or not in a station that you get very well, which actually those stations cover over a third of the United States. But if you happen to not be in that area, of course, we have the podcast available on iTunes Again, it's Chris Brown's True Stewardship. You can find out a ton more at stewardship.com.
All right, very good stuff. So I mentioned we were in the summer, so our team's kind of on an event break, but our spring event season was amazing. And we had an event through our Entree Leadership brand called the Entree Leadership Summit. Phenomenal collection of speakers. And Chris, you got to come out there and be with us and interviewed the speakers. And our feature conversation today, none other than Pat Lencioni. And before we talk a little bit more about Pat, what was that experience like for you to kind of sit there and listen to these guys and then go one-on-one with them?
I don't get starstruck very often.
Yeah.
With Patrick Lencioni, because I've read so many of his books, and not only read them, but like Evernote outlined them and like highlighted them and used them in conversations. And most of the time I give him credit.
Pat's fine with it.
Yeah, he's going to be okay. But anyway, I was a little starstruck, but I'm telling you, the amount of wisdom that he gives in a two-minute answer is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I just feel like this particular conversation, we got 60 minutes of content in 17 minutes. Yeah. So we're pretty excited about it.
Well, if you don't know who Pat Lencioni is, number one, you should.
Yes.
Number two, I can introduce him best by saying he literally is one of the best-selling business authors of the last decade, easily. And the man has a wonderful way of delivering wonderfully practical content, a lot of times through story. This latest book is called The Advantage. Chris, why do you want to sit down with Pat on this particular topic of The Advantage, and how does it fit in your mind for this audience as church leaders?
You know, what was funny is I was sitting there talking to him and thinking about all these principles that he's poured in my life, and I've read so many of his books, I forgot what books they came from. But when I think back of The Advantage when I read it, which was a couple years ago, it was the best accumulation of all of his principles all in one book. I felt like it was just the best overarching book that he's written. And so that's the one I really kind of wanted to zero in on, the things that church leaders need to hear the most during this sabbatical season.
All right, let's get right to it. Here is Chris Brown going one-on-one with Pat Lencioni.
All right, well, we're here. We're backstage at the Entree Leadership Summit in San Diego and have the privilege and honor to sit down with the Pat Lencioni. And my wife and I have learned so much from all of your books, all your resources, all your teachings. Of course, many of the pastors that are listening today have as well. And I wanted to make sure that I grabbed you backstage to have a little chat about everything you just said yesterday for a couple hours. So yesterday, you and I were talking about, well, it was me, you, and Perry Noble. We're talking about church leadership in general. And he asked you a question. He said, what do you think is the biggest thing that's holding churches back? And I loved your answer. I thought that might be a good place for us to start.
Well, you know, based on my experience, both in the church where I volunteer and work and then the churches I work with, it's this niceness that we feel like we have to be because we're afraid of someone accusing us of being mean.
Yeah.
And I work with churches. I'm like, what's the worst thing that somebody could say about you in your church? It's that you're what? And they said, mean. And unfairly or not, we shy away from doing anything that someone might misconstrue as not being nice.
Yeah.
And of course, Jesus never said anything about always being nice. He said, love people always and be kind and honor them. But that means you have to speak truth.
Yeah.
And in church, the stakes are just so high. We're dealing with people coming to know the Lord. So when we don't speak truth out of fear of being misperceived, it's really selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, because we have to pour into others and say the right things and argue about decisions. You know, the apostles did that. So we have to do that too. We just live in a society that says never let anybody falsely accuse you of being mean, which means we'll actually be more likely to go out in the parking lot or outside in the hallway afterward and say something that kind of is mean because we don't say what needs to be said to one another. Yeah. And this is true in all of business and all of society, but wow, it's even worse in churches, and the cost in churches is greater because deep down inside we know it's not the way to be.
Yeah, and you talk a lot about sanctioned incompetence. There's no such thing, right? And you talk about breaking down of trust. And then yesterday you talked about building cohesive teams.
Yeah.
And so what you're talking about there, I can see the symptoms of this kind of behavior really hurting that cohesion. Talk to us a little bit about building teams and what needs to be present.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing we have to be, and it's so great that this is biblical. I mean, we have to be vulnerable. You know, as we say at Mass, he humbled himself to share in our humanity.
Yes.
God became human. And then we deal with one another and we don't even be human. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we have to demonstrate our humanity to one another and be vulnerable to each other. And that's how you build trust. Without vulnerability, you can't build trust. People will not trust you.
Lead pastor too? Lead pastor?
Oh, it has to start at the top.
Yeah.
And it's tough when you're a spiritual shepherd as well as an organizational one, because then you feel like, well, people have certain expectations of me. But the truth is, all leaders need to demonstrate vulnerability. As a parent, one of the most powerful things I can say to my children is, I'm wrong,
yeah,
or I'm sorry. And yet we think, oh, I shouldn't do that. It's going to make me look weak. And of course, it's just the opposite.
Yeah.
And so that's where it begins. It begins with the leader and the leadership team demonstrating that vulnerability to one another,
yeah,
building that kind of trust, and other people will see that and follow suit.
Yeah. Is there a line there where somewhere where there's too much vulnerability?
You know, no. There's a line where you have to have enough emotional intelligence to realize what's appropriate in the given moment.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you come to work every day and tell everybody your story about your cat. Or, yeah, you know, it's like, okay, too much information.
Yeah.
But there's no such thing as too much vulnerability. Mm-hmm. As I like to joke, you know, if you come to work every day and you say, hey, I made a mistake. Oh, I screwed that up. I don't know what I'm doing here. I made another mistake. Well, there's a competence issue, not a vulnerability problem. And yes, we need to be competent, but not perfect.
Yeah.
But if we've made three mistakes in a row, the only thing worse than admitting it is not.
Yeah.
And so vulnerability is a powerful, powerful, misunderstood, often countercultural thing, but it's especially important in a church.
Yeah. And when you're seeing this vulnerability, you're seeing environments of more trust, right?
And oh, yeah.
And how does that trust help with the, let's say, let's take conflict, for instance, the managing of conflict. How does that look different in an environment of trust, in an environment where there is no trust?
So when you go to a meeting or you sit down with somebody to talk about something, and you know you're vulnerable, you both have mutual vulnerability, which means you'll both admit when you're wrong, you'll acknowledge when somebody else has a better answer, you'll apologize if you go too far and you say the wrong thing. When you know that's true with somebody, you don't hesitate to engage in conflict with them, because you know all you're doing is searching for the best answer, the pursuit of truth.
Yeah.
So if you and I are arguing, we're not thinking, oh, this is going to destroy our relationship. We're like, I just need him to understand what I'm thinking, or I need to understand what he's thinking. As soon as one of us is convinced, we'll both say, oh, I'm so glad we had this talk.
Yeah.
If there's no trust, then deep down inside, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to get my way. And that means I'm trying to manipulate you, and that destroys trust. So you have to have that vulnerability before you engage in conflict. Conflict without trust is politics, and that's not a good thing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, we talked about vulnerability a little bit, but what about accountability? How is that different? And does accountability need to be peer-to-peer, or accountability up, down?
Yeah.
What does accountability look like on a leadership team?
Well, a lot of people confuse that conflict with accountability because they're both kind of emotional. Mm-hmm. Conflict is disagreeing about an issue or a topic. What should we do?
Yeah.
Accountability is when I hold you personally accountable for your behavior. That's even harder.
Yeah.
It's one thing to talk about an issue that's separate from the two of us, but we even get passionate about that. But then when it comes down to say, listen, I think you can do better, mm-hmm, or I think what you did was probably not the right way to handle this, that is even harder for people to do. Of course, embedded in that is the L word, it's love. Mm-hmm. So if you love someone, which I hope that the people we work with and for, and that, yeah, work for us, that we love them, we have to hold them accountable. We have to do it in love, but it's going to be uncomfortable, mm-hmm, and they will thank us for it. Maybe not in that moment, maybe the next day, maybe 2 weeks later, but in their life, people are looking for others that will hold them accountable. Now, again, though, there has to be trust there.
Yeah.
You just don't go to somebody, I have no relationship with you, I'd like to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
But when there's trust and you've engaged with that person in conflict and you've made a decision, then the kindest thing, maybe not always the nicest, but the, yeah, kindest thing you can do is hold them accountable and hope that they do the same for you.
Yeah.
This is something that's so misunderstood in our society. Our society today is all about affirming everyone, yeah, in everything.
Yes.
It's like, well, if you're not affirming me in my behavior, then you are doing something offensive to me.
Right.
Of course, in a world where there's no truth, that's what happens. But when there's truth, and in a church you've agreed on truth, that's what we hold each other accountable for.
Yeah, and it's counterintuitive. You actually think that that would be, the affirming would be kind, but it's actually unkind.
Oh, gosh.
Because they just have no clue that they're on the right, the wrong track.
Absolutely, and the greatest sins are the ones that we can cover up by claiming that we're being nice.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so nice, I affirmed them in that. And you're leading them down a terrible path. They're going to suffer for that. Their families are going to suffer for that. How do you feel? Well, at least they thought I was nice.
Right.
Oh, that's a bad, bad situation.
That's such a good word for us as church leaders. What would you say, this whole idea of accountability, I'm wondering if this affects this phrase that I've heard before. It's lonely at the top.
Yeah.
Why do you think that leaders say that?
Well, because if they're doing their job well, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine being a leader without a wife that I loved, and most importantly, without my faith.
Yeah.
Because there's those moments, You know, leadership is selfless. We talk about servant leadership, and people use that, especially in church. Oh, yeah, servant leadership, selfless, you know. But remember what that means. That means standing there and having to do something that maybe no one else at the moment thinks is the right thing. But because of your adherence to truth and love, you're going to do it. Yeah. And you may be the only one willing to do that, and you're going to suffer. Leaders get punished, and sometimes there's nowhere to turn. Of course, you've got to look at Jesus. I mean, we all think that, you know, he went to the cross surrounded by thousands of people cheering him on, but they abandoned him.
Yeah.
And to be a leader means you have to stand alone sometimes. It doesn't mean you have to seek it out all the time, and that it doesn't happen all the time, but you have to be willing to, and when it's necessary, you got to do it. It is extraordinarily lonely.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to be liked.
Yeah.
But you can't be a great leader and always be liked. You can be loved and respected, but some days they're not going to be happy with what you're doing.
Mm. You had talked a little bit yesterday about these dynamics that go into building cohesion on a team. One of them that surprised me was paying attention to results, because all the rest seemed to be very interpersonal,
right,
and relational. And then that one was, but this cohesion, there needs to be some kind of focus on paying attention to those results.
Yeah.
In the church world, there is a segment of the church world that's scared to talk about results.
Yeah.
What would you tell the church leader about this dynamic?
Well, I'd say, first of all, results are the most relevant results that matter. So in a church, it's not going to be the collection. It's not going to be the attendance. It's not, those things are indicators, mm-hmm. but you can have a great collection and great attendance and nobody coming to know Jesus. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask yourself, what are the really true right
yes.
results? Sometimes they're harder to measure than others. Just because they're hard to measure doesn't mean they're not the right ones. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people seek out, well, what's the most measurable thing? Let's measure that. It's like, well, that's not necessarily what we're here for.
Right.
But the other part of results that are important is we're talking about the collective results of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the worship leader, and you're the missions leader, and you're the operations leader, and you're the teaching pastor, the results have to be the same for all of you. Because and too often we go, you know, I think the music's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, the preaching's not great, but we're doing our job.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're not pouring into the teaching pastor enough to teach, to help them understand what they could do better.
Yeah.
And so too often we say, my side of the boat's not sinking.
Yeah.
Of course, the boat sinks altogether. And that's why when we say a focus on results,
yeah.
it's not your individual results, but the collective good of the organization and what you're doing to serve.
That's so good.
And if the singing isn't bringing people to Jesus, and if the operations isn't bringing people to Jesus, and if the liturgy or the teaching or whatever else is isn't yeah. bringing people to Jesus, then you're not doing your job. One goal.
Yeah.
One goal.
I love it. What are some key questions that leadership teams need to be asking themselves?
Well, I think one of the things they have to ask themselves, are meetings interesting?
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, are you engaging in spirited, angst-ridden, like in a good way, not anxiety in the bad way, but are you going to meetings with, is there tension because
yeah.
you really care?
I love that part in the book. And
yeah.
it talks about moments of tension.
Because, you know, if something's worth doing, that's going to involve some amount of concern about, are we doing the right thing?
Yeah.
And boring meetings are almost always the result of people being nice, not saying what needs to be said.
Yeah.
There's almost always something worth caring about.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're having meetings where people are bored and unengaged, it's because you're not putting the right issues on the table.
Yeah.
Or things are just so good that you shouldn't have any meetings. But I haven't found an organization that had that.
That's for sure.
So that's one thing. Are meetings good?
Yeah.
The other thing is, do we disagree? Are we uncomfortable? I think probably the greatest misnomer in society today is, if I'm going to run a business or be a leader of any kind, I'll do anything. I just don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't want to have that awkward moment. Awkward moments are what growth is all about. Jesus had awkward moments with people all the time.
Yes.
And it was through that they came to know him.
Yeah.
And when we avoid awkward moments, it's to protect ourselves and we don't grow.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
They weren't awkward for Jesus,
yeah.
but he's God, so.
Now, you speak a lot about clarity. I'm jumping around through all your books. In my head, I'm remembering all the times that you, through your books, you've really changed my life as a leader. You talk a lot about clarity. In the church world today, where do you think there probably is the highest level of a lack of clarity?
Well, so there's the six questions, right? And at the top one is great for churches. Because I work with a widget manufacturer or a software company or whatever else. I say, why do you do what you do? And they're like, well, I don't know. Why did I do this anyway? I was talking to some guys yesterday about this. But in a church, we know why we do what we do. Of course, if we lose sight of that, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But every church is doing the same thing. And we're not trying to wordsmith it. We're trying to bring people to Jesus for their salvation.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know,
that's
straight
very
up.
So that's pretty clear. Now, values are pretty clear on in the sense that we ought to be, and that Jesus made our behaviors, required behaviors, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Then what do we do is pretty clear too. That's the third question. Like, we know generally what it is. I know one church, as I'm a Catholic, and Catholic parishes are all pretty similar in terms of what they do because there's a lot of requirements. From one evangelical church to another, they can be quite different. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there's a little clarity that needs to be made there. But then when it gets into the strategy, this is where, how will we succeed? Mm-hmm. This is where churches tend to go, well, we're just a church. We do the same thing everybody else does. It's like, no, yeah. What's around you? Like somebody said, look out your front door. What do you see? Your strategy needs to meet that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes churches do the generic thing. It's like, we're a church just like the church down the street, so we do all the same things. It's like, no, do it differently, though, because you need to reach someone else in a different way.
Yeah.
Now, you're doing it in the truth, but there's a lot of different ways to reach people. So sometimes strategy, yeah. How will we succeed? That's the area where churches aren't clear.
Yeah.
Because like, well, I was at a church once before, I'll be at a church another time. We pretty much do all the same thing in the same way.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
And that goes back to what you were saying earlier about the church not being willing to stand up and be mean. They're affirming everything because a lot of churches have 15,000 ministries that they don't want to happen, but they just don't want to say no. Right?
Well, and you know why? Because somebody, it's their pet ministry.
Yep.
And they say, but you can't cancel my ministry. There's 14 people that come once a month. And you're like, but we need 140 in this other area.
Yes.
And if we keep spending on all this, and talk about it, no pastor wants somebody to raise. Can you imagine? We've signed a petition, all 14 of us, that bingo has to stay. And people will go to their death for this. They're not really, but
right.
But they'll, and pastors go, okay, pretty soon you've got 1,400 ministries, yeah. All of which are somewhat mediocre, and the four that need to be great are suffering.
Yeah.
And that's where a team that's on the same page, that's clear about what their goals are, they can jointly say, we have to end that program.
Yeah.
And we will take the hit together, and we will go to those people in love and explain why those four ministries have to end so this one can begin. And sometimes people are going to say, if you do that, I'm leaving the church.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave this church. And you have to be willing to say, listen, I don't want you to do that, but maybe there's another church that'll suit you better.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to do that.
Yes.
And the thing about if you're a pastor and someone leaves your congregation, oh, we feel terrible. And of course, you don't want to be actively encouraging people to do that unless, of course, they're opposed to what you believe is the right thing.
Yeah.
Trying to keep everybody, whether it's staff members or congregation, is a great way to ensure that you're going to be trying to please everyone and ultimately pleasing no one.
Yeah, and have no clarity.
Right. Yes. But man, when somebody says, hey, I'm leaving your church, I'm going to another one. Oh, what did I do wrong?
It's a big personal hit.
Maybe nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. I have no doubts that there is a group of listeners right now who are writing down all their ministries and putting a line through some of them. And there's another group of pastors out there that are listening right now, and they're saying, amen, amen, amen. Yeah. Keep going, Pat, keep going.
And that's where if you have that strategy, then you have a criteria for which ones you keep and which ones you don't.
Yeah.
You're not just being random about it. Like, hey, I don't think I like your ministry. We're going to cut that. You go, listen, if this is what our church is about, we're in this neighborhood, we're trying to reach these people, and this is our mission, and this is our strategy. Then you ask the very people that are running those things, which of our ministries are really doing that? Yeah. Oftentimes when you have that kind of clarity, people will go, yeah, bingo's just not cutting it.
Yeah, it's just the writing's on the wall.
It's not capricious.
Yep.
It's not random.
Mm-hmm.
And then if a person goes, yes, I understand the strategy. Yes, I understand that my ministry doesn't do it. I still want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Then you go, I think it's time for you not to be doing this.
Yeah, so good. So good. You just used a really big word there and you lost me. Capricious?
Capricious. Like, oh, I don't know. Let's just pick that ministry to cut.
Doesn't he do that all the time? He uses big words and he loses us. We appreciate you so much. And you really, really ministered to a lot of people out here in San Diego. And you just ministered to and served thousands of church leaders around this country. We really, really appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me here. God bless.
Thank you. Well, folks, that was truly an honor to sit down and talk with the Patrick Lencioni. I hope that encouraged you like it did me. And listen, here's the heartbeat behind this month's podcast. You're in a time of recalibrating and re-strategizing and re-evaluating, regrouping. Whether you're a ministry leader, lead pastor, maybe executive level leader, maybe you're a layperson. We want to make sure that we pour back into you. And so we were so blessed that we got to sit down with Patrick Lencioni. And I pray that encouraged you. Those are some pretty high level things to consider in your organization, in your ministry. And we pray that it ministered to you.
Well, it was great, Chris. Absolutely fun. And I know you enjoyed sitting there in the Omni La Costa. Hello. You know, can't think of a more picturesque place to hang out and talk to Pat Lencioni. It really was good stuff. And here's what's cool, folks. Chris and our leadership team, with everything we're doing on the stewardship side of things, they decided they'd get with Pat and say, hey, can we give away some books? The answer was a resounding yes. We're going to give away 20. That's right, 20 books, absolutely free. Here's how you enter to win. This is Pat's latest book, The Advantage. Here's what we want you to do. We want you to go on Twitter. Chris's Twitter handle is at Chris Brown on air. At Chris Brown on air. So we want you to tweet to Chris something about this podcast. Did it encourage you? How did it encourage you? What was a takeaway? Maybe a quote. Anything you want to say, it's got to be positive or we dump it in the trash. Is that fair to say? All right.
Yes.
But here's the point. You tweet at Chris Brown on air and you use the hashtag The Advantage. Hashtag The Advantage. That qualifies you. And then Bob, the producer, well, he'll throw them all in a hat, I guess, and he'll pick out 20 winners, and you will get a free copy of Pat Lencioni's book, The Advantage. That is some value add right there. So we want to thank Pat and his team, his publisher, and of course, the leadership here for doing this. This is a tremendous value. We love giving stuff away, don't we, Chris?
We do. And I can't tell you how much of a privilege it is to serve you all, the church world, the ones on the front lines of God's plan A, the local church, the bride of Christ. Thank you guys for what you do, and we just enjoy serving you.
Well, Chris, you said it so well, and as we wrap this latest edition, we want to do what we always do. I want to thank Bob, our producer. We want to thank Pat Lencioni and his team for making him available to us. We know that he added tremendous value to you. And of course, we want to thank all of you for listening to this podcast. We appreciate you so very much. The good news is we'll be talking with you again very soon.